Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show, only in the new Chosen app. Download the Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
Asbury Methodist Village in Montgomery County takes senior living to the next level, creating extraordinary opportunities for a fulfilling future. Work your brain and body in our new wellness center. Stroll our expansive campus and 17-acre nature preserve. Stay sharp with our resident-run college and find so many new ways to get involved and make a difference for others. Anticipate more from your retirement. Visit AsburyMethodistVillage.org today. Your future's here. Equal opportunity housing provider.
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 100, that's right, triple digits, baby, of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clegg and Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a really fun episode in store today with a great guest. And with me, as always, my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, bud?
I can't believe we made it to 100, man. It feels like we just started this and already there. It's been a good ride, and so I'm thankful to been a part of it. And thank you to everybody who's been with us 100 episodes, man. It's been a lot, and you know, we're looking forward to many more. I know our guest, his podcast just reached 1,000 not long ago, so you know, 100 seems minuscule in comparison, but hey, we're really honored that you've been here with us from the start, and we appreciate all the support over the last year and a half now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we finally got some more baseball news to talk about, which we won't really be talking about today. But all the break, like Sonny Gray trade, this happened about 20 minutes before we came on here. Nelson Cruz might sign in the next 15, 20 minutes. Who knows? So it's fun to have all this flurry of moves so far over the last 24 to 48 hours. But today we will be talking about some intriguing young, you know, hitters for 2022, some that kind of broke out last year, others that might this year, and see where we are on them and relevance to ADP and how confident we are in them this season. And I said we have a great guest, and we sure do. I think Chris kind of gave it away with the 1,000th episode thing. Obviously, everyone knows this name. He is a writer for Fangraphs and one half, or one third, I should say, of the Infamous Sleeper and the Bust podcast. Y'all know him, Mr. Paul Spores, joining us. Paul, how are you doing, buddy?
Gentlemen, I'm well. Thank you so much for having me on, and congrats on 100. That is a big number for sure. You know, I always say that you don't have a podcast. Podcast doesn't officially start till you have an episode that doesn't record. So have you guys been through that rite of passage yet, where somebody forgot to record? Because that's usually a big marker, but 100 is a pretty good marker as well.
I actually have not. Yeah.
Hey, that's good. That's good. It's usually somewhere in that first, like, 15 to 20 episodes, it seems everybody has one where it's like, oh, we did a whole episode and we didn't record. And sometimes it's with a guest, which is obviously very frightening. Of course, if you guys have been using StreamYard the whole way, it's a lot easier to kind of make sure that it's set.
Right.
But some of the older stuff back in the day was just kind of these different little programs that you're using to record and filter it through these other different things. And then if one doesn't connect, you lose the whole episode. So congrats on 100, though. That's awesome. And I'm honored to be the guest on 100.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So what year did Sleeper on the Bus start?
I was not there at the very beginning, so I actually cannot answer that.
When did you hop into that?
That would be a question that I should be able to answer, but then that's going to expose my memory as pretty bad. I'm going to say 16.
Okay.
So that's probably, when I think.
It was probably a couple years before that it started. I said over 1,000 episodes, and you guys do multiple weeks. So I was trying to like do some rough math in my head, but it's too early on a Sunday. I say that's 2 o'clock Eastern time. It's not early at all, but not really any math I want to do right now. But we got a really fun episode today. Before we get into all that, though, the usual housekeeping, you can find us all on Twitter. Paul is at Spore, S-P-O-R-E-R. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at Eric Cross 04. And our show is at Fantrex Toolshed. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon for extra content from both Chris and I. And of course, check out all the other great work we have on the Fantrex HQ network, including the 2022 draft kits. But enough of that. Let's get right into it. We have a lot of fun names today. We probably got, I don't know, 12, 13, 15, something like that names on the list. All very intriguing hitters for 2022. We're going to break it down. We'll do corner infielders and catchers first, then some middle infielders, and then some outfielders to round out the show. Well, let's start with some catchers here, because for the first time in, man, a long time, we have a lot of intriguing young catching talents right now that's going to be our, you know, that will be having an impact this year for fantasy purposes. And we're going to talk about a trio of them in particular, not including Adley Rutschman. You know, he'll be up soon, and we'll talk about him when that happens. But three that will be on their opening day roster and starting. We got Dalton Varsho out in Arizona, Kiber Ruiz with the Nationals, and Alejandro Kirk for the Toronto Blue Jays, who's the only one that kind of has playing time concerns as of right now. Paul, you know, obviously Varsho is going way higher than the other two so far in drafts for 2022, but you know, what is your general mindset on these three? Are any of these three guys you're targeting in 2022, and how excited are you for their production this season?
Yeah, I'm a pretty big fan of all three, and I will say I listened to you the whole way through there, but I'm a pretty decent multitasker, and I figured out when I started it was 2015, and my first episode was 189. So, wow. But as far as Varsho, Ruiz, and Kirk, I'm actually pretty big on Varsho in particular. He's somebody, you know, I'm buying the hype. I see what happened last year, and that second half really started to come through the way people wanted Varsho to. He offers speed. He's a non-catching catcher. These are things that I love, you know, especially the non-catching catcher aspect. I'm definitely down for guys that aren't going to catch a lot. In fact, I'd be fine if this was his last year qualifying a catcher. If he doesn't even play 20 this year, that's fine. I think next year will be the last year. I think he'll get 20 this year and then qualify for 23. But I think that will be the last year that Dalton Varsho is catcher eligible. But for 2022, speed component, not catching much, love it. With Ruiz, one thing I like about him so much is that he offers something that you don't see a lot at catching, and that isn't the speed, but rather the batting average. That is his calling card. That is his main tool. He should set a pretty good foundation there, even if it's kind of a 270, which is probably on the lower end for what he should be able to do over a full season. He hit 273 in his call-up last year. You know, it could maybe dip down in the 260s, but even that would be a boon for what we usually get at catcher. So I really like Keibert Ruiz too. I'm open to taking him. And then as far as Kirk goes, I've been actually fading the Toronto catchers a little bit because of the disjointed offseason that we got, or the lack thereof, until a couple of days ago when they kind of opened the starting line, and hopefully the floodgates open, right? We've been having trickles and trickles. I'm ready for a
They're
big
getting there.
Rush. Yeah, right. It's coming. My prediction is tomorrow. I told a friend, and we're recording this on Sunday, I said the weekend will be trickles, and then I think Monday is when it opens. But what we need is Toronto to clear up that logjam. It is a problem right now, and it's pushed me off of Kirk a little bit, even though I really like him, because he's the worst of the three defensively between he, Jansen, and Reese McGuire. Reese McGuire is the worst offensively, so you got kind of Danny Jansen at the top with the best defense and flashes of a bat. Reese, who's the best defensively, but terrible bat. And then Kirk, who's pretty bad defensively, but has a really, really good bat. And then you have Gabriel Moreno, who we haven't even talked about, because right. he's in the minors, but he's knocking on the door. I saw him at Fall League, and oh my goodness, was he impressive.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm laying off of him. I have other guys I like, Varsho, Ruiz. I'm big on a Tyler Stevenson breakout this year. I'm in on getting Adley Rutschman. I've gotten him in a couple leagues. So I've gone elsewhere, even though I like the Toronto catcher, Alejandro Kirk. I just can't do it with the logjam there.
Yeah, and that's very, very fair. And I've always said, like, if you combine, like, Jansen's defense with Kirk's offense, you'd have, like, an MVP caliber catcher right there. Like, basically what Adley Rutschman could be down the road here. So, yeah, I love Kirk's bat. And even if he can get it in the lineup 4 or 5 times a week, maybe some little bit of DH as well, I think he could be definitely fantasy valuable. But, yeah, I want to see them clear up that logjam some way, somehow. I'm not sure how they do it. But, yeah, and I'm with you there on Varsho as well. Like, look at you mentioned the second half last year, or in 219 plate appearances in the second half, slash 290, 349, 530, 10 home runs, 5 steals. So showing that power speed line that he always showed in the minor leagues. I thought the ADP was a bit high at first, but I've talked myself into it. I've actually got a few shares of Varsho right around, pick 100, give or take, in 2 catcher formats. So I'm buying into that. And Keibert Ruiz is someone, and you mentioned the average. He was a 301 career hitter in the minor leagues, and that power finally kind of materialized in 2021 after not really being there previously. So yeah, if he can get 270, 15 to 20 home runs, I think he could definitely justify his ADP there as well. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. And everything we mentioned about Varsho, like, he did all of this hitting out mostly the 7th and 8th slot last year in the lineup. And so that's worth noting. And he should bump up to the top of that lineup, maybe hitting 2 or 3 potentially, which is huge for his value. And we know the lineup's not stellar by any means, but you get to the top of the lineup, you're going to get more plate appearances. It only increases your chance at more run and RBI opportunities. I think that we're looking at a potential 20 home run, 12 to 15 stolen base type guy, and that's extremely valuable at catcher. And there's a good field to hit as well. So all over it, because he's going to play so much. And it'll be interesting to see like where he stacks up against other catchers at the end of the season from a plate appearance standpoint. But you mentioned playing center field. That's huge for his value because he's going to play more often. There's less wear and tear on his body. So I'm all over it. Like I said, I was kind of with Eric where I thought the cost was higher than I expected, I guess, early draft season. But I do think that it's pretty reasonable. Ruiz is another one you mentioned. His cost is justified as well because he's such a good hitter. And we saw the power really blossom last year. And that's what kind of we were waiting on with him. Always a great contact hitter in the minors, but the power really didn't come along. And last year we saw it. So I think Ruiz is a solid target as well, and he's one that could play 120 games potentially. And I think that he could get that many in Washington. He's out of the shadows in Los Angeles where they have a million great catchers on the roster. It's kind of a Toronto situation like we talked about with Kirk. So Ruiz is going to get the chance to play every day now, which is huge for his value. Going back to Kirk, I think a great man, if he went to Miami, like that would be a great fit for him to play more often.
Yep.
Obviously not a great ballpark, but I know they got Jacob Stallings, but I think that Kirk could, it's like a good trade fit in my opinion, because Toronto could use another starter. I know they just got Kikuchi, but you never know.
I don't even like Kikuchi that much.
Yeah.
And you know, then he probably wouldn't catch a ton with Stallings there. Like, he's a stalwart. I think the DH avenue would be a bit more open than it is in Toronto for Kirk too. And like, you know, I don't think he's as inept behind the dish as say Varsho, who just really can't catch, but they don't need him to be, but maybe once or twice a week catching, but then get some DH plate appearances. I don't know if those DH plate appearances are going to be there in Toronto for Kirk. So getting him out of there seems like the right move.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anywhere outside Toronto would be great for him.
For sure. And going back to Varsho here, like, for what it's worth, you know, Ross Arisos has him in the three spot right between Ketel Marte and Christian Walker. And a lot of the projections on Varsho, you know, Steamer, the Bat, ATC, Zips, they're all kind of like, you know, 430-ish plate appearances with like 16 to 17 home runs, 8 to 10 steals. But that's only in 430 plate appearances. Like, give him another, you know, 100 to 150 if he's, you know, in the lineup basically every day. Yeah, you could go over 2010 easily while having that catcher eligibility, which I think the last person to go 2010 as a catcher was Russell Martin, maybe like 15 years ago. Or maybe he didn't hit 20 home runs. But yeah, very rare to get this type of power speed from a catcher. We'll see how much longer he sticks a catcher, but I'm fine with, yeah, like what you said, Paul. Even if it's just for this year, yeah, it's gonna be fun ride for this year. I mean, keep it Ruiz, like he could be hitting, you know, was high in that lineup, like right behind Juan Soto. You could get a lot of RBI opportunities there because they don't really have much else in the lineup. It's like Soto and Josh Bell, and then a bunch of crap after that. So I like Lane Thomas fan.
Yeah,
me too. But like after that, more so, I was saying. But yeah, he could find himself in that five spot. That wouldn't surprise me at all either. But moving off a catcher here, let's go over to some corner infielders. And one guy that took the world by storm in the second half of last season after the Cubs fire sale, they got rid of Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo. That opened up both corners, and Frank the Tank Schwindel seized that opportunity. Overall, /311, 354, 560, 14 home runs in 274 plate appearances. Now, some of the metrics don't really look great. Like, hard contact rate is kind of so-so. Same with the barrel rate, both slightly above league average. Good plate approach, though, doesn't strike out much at all. And that's kind of like what he was in the minor leagues. He always hit for good average, kept the K rate down. But how much are you buying Schwindel as a viable, you know, starting corner infield option this year, Paul?
I think as a starting corner infield option, there is viability there. Like, I think there's some backing to the skills that we saw out of Schwindel from that sample. Obviously, he's not going to keep that up. I wouldn't extrapolate anything, but I also think he stops short of being like a Brian LaHare situation where he just completely falls off the map. There was contact capability there, although I will say the 11% swinging strike rate says that maybe there's a few more strikeouts coming as opposed to the 16% strikeout rate we saw from him last year. I could definitely see that trickling up a bit with the batting average coming down. But, you know, I'm looking at projections that have him for like 20, low 20s homers with like a 260, high 260s average. I think that checks out. I think I can totally see that as a projection for Frank Schwindel. I know the bat X from Derek Carty, which I do like a lot, they're a bit lower. They're talking more 20 homers on the button with a 246 average. And I certainly think that's possible, right? I think the range of outcomes there are kind of captured pretty decently with the, I guess the range is bigger, but you know, you look at like what ATC does or Zips versus the bat, and it's either that high 260s or mid 240s average, and then somewhere in the 20 to 25 homer range. That all makes sense. I guess the one question I would have with regards to what Chicago's doing right now is, we've talked about how like, oh, the playing time is locked. I'm not 1,000% certain that it is, because they're not rebuilding. I don't think they're just letting guys play and be unfettered with their playing time. You know, signing Stroman, bringing in veteran Andrelton Simmons, Yan Gomes, even as a backup catcher, I think he's too good to be a backup. I think they could be trading Contreras probably for win now pieces. They seem to be more of a retool than a rebuild. I'm not sure they should be, but that seems to be what they're doing. My point being, not that Schwindel won't start the season. I don't think they get anybody right now to replace Schwindel, but if he doesn't stay strong out of the gate, I don't think that he just has that opportunity to come out of that and keep the playing time. If Schwindel's bad early, he could be replaced. There's no guarantees there with the playing time, and I've heard him painted as a playing time guarantee. So that's the one thing about Schwindel that I do push back against. But as far as the skills, I think he has the talent to be a solid corner.
Yeah, and the Cubs do seem to be retooling. I'm definitely there with you. Like, they've been rumored in as one of the Carlos Correa suitors. So yeah, definitely could be a couple more bats here. Maybe they get him some of these other big bats like Castellanos. Maybe there's a reunion there. I don't know. But definitely could see them bringing in a couple more bats here. Like I said, they wouldn't be rebuilding if they signed Marcus Stroman. Like, why would you sign Marcus Stroman if you're in a rebuild, right? Like, you think you're going to win, maybe not this year, but maybe next year if you're signing.
Yeah, they're already thinking next year is time to kind of be back. And good for them. I'm glad that they're not doing a full teardown. I respect it. It was surprising, though. It was a little jarring that I thought they were in more of that teardown. But you look at it, I mean, they don't have a ton of real youth on the team. They have guys that are inexperienced, but they are in their high 20s. You know, Schwindel himself, Rafael Ortega, Patrick Wisdom. You know, Ian Happ's going to be in his age 28 season this year, I believe. So, you know, he's not a baby, or age 27 season for him. And I really do like him, but like, they don't have a bunch of 25 and unders that they're putting in anyway. So I guess it makes logical sense. Hey, we got to go with what we got right now, and we got to try to get back sooner than later. And they did well in the hall when they traded the superstars. I thought they did really well last year at that trade deadline. They smashed it. So I don't blame them necessarily for trying to stay, avoiding the 100 loss season that could have loomed large this year had they fully torn it down.
Yeah, they definitely, Chris and I talked about that a lot, but the haul they got, most of these guys are in the lower minors right now. So maybe you'll see a lot of like 2-3-4 year deal types to kind of get them through contention wise until some of these younger potential star prospects they got are ready to debut in the major leagues. Chris, are you a Schwindel guy this year?
I like him, but I agree there's a big range of outcomes here. And honestly, I've just found myself drafting other first basemen in this range. There's a lot to like around where he goes in drafts. You got the likes of Bobby Dalbec, Brandon Belt, Luke Voit. I even like on a rebound. So like, all these guys are right here in this range. And so I've kind of not been drafting Schwindel for that reason. He normally goes higher than I'd like. And if I'm waiting, I'm looking at this later tier of guys, or the mid tier of guys like the Josh Bell, Cron, and Hoskins. And then if I'm looking for the corner infield late, it's like a Luke Voit. I love the rebound there. Even a Bobby Dalbec who potentially provide that big power. So I just haven't found myself with a lot of Schwindel.
I'm a Nathaniel Lowe fan too. I think Jesus Aguilar is 2080 with like a 260 average. He doesn't offer that big batting average sinkhole. I think Rowdy Tellez has a chance to be a breakout. Like, I just find myself skipping over Schwindel, less about my issues with him and more about liking so many others around him. So I think it's a great call out.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. There's so many people think that first base is kind of, maybe it's not as glorious as it used to be when we had, it was arguably one of the top positions for fantasy purposes, but it's kind of surprisingly deep, and I don't think it gets enough credit. Like, you guys just mentioned all those targets that you can get after pick 200 at this position. So, yeah, I'm definitely there, too. I love Brandon Belt. If he could just stay healthy, that would be awesome. Even, like a guy like Jonathan Scope for your Tigers there, Paul, he's always been a really solid power bat there. I like Lowe as well. Voit seems to be forgotten after he had that really nice 2020. Lamonte Wade, Rowdy Tellez, a couple other guys I like later on, so yeah, definitely a lot of intriguing first baseman after pick 200, that's for sure. We'll keep it here in the NL Central, go over to the other side of the diamond to third base with Ke'Bryan Hayes of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Had battled some injuries last year with the wrist, so that kind of zapped a lot of his production. Still hit 257, 6 home runs, and 9 steals in 396 plate appearances. And even through that, still had a 45.8% hard hit rate. But really, kind of we're left wondering what could have been if he had stayed healthy this year, or last year, excuse me. And now the ADP this year is actually not too bad. I thought it would be maybe a little higher because of the potential he's shown, but right now it's averaging since February 1st in NFBC DCs right around pick 140 or so, right sandwiched between DJ LeMahieu and Justin Turner. Are you a Ke'Bryan Hayes fan this year, Paul?
I sure am. I quite like Ke'Bryan Hayes. And I think one of the big reasons that I like him is his speed. And I think his speed is a little bit underrated. And I think that's something that could really be delivered this year, that even if the power isn't ready for prime time and fully developed, which I don't think it necessarily will be, he's only going into his age 25 season and, you know, really his first full MLB season because the wrist stifled him last year. I think we might see, you know, high teens, low 20s homers perhaps. But where I really think the power or the value could come from for Cabrian Hayes is with some speed. Now, he's projected for low double digits. I really think he can live in the upper teens, maybe even low 20s, depending how much he runs. A lot of things with speed is it's a will thing, right? You have to have the green light from the team, but then you have to want to do it yourself. I think the big poster boy on the negative end of that is Ketel Marte. He's been fast, at least before the two hamstring injuries, but he never really ran. And we kept kind of projecting that speed, like it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. It's like, no, it's not. It's actually not coming because he doesn't seem to want to run. It doesn't seem like the team stifles Ketel Marte. It just seems like he doesn't really want to run. Hayes.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan. And we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Has the speed to be an impact-based deal. He went 9-for-10 last year. He had some big double-digit seasons in the minors. I think batting average up in the like 270s or higher with double-digit speed and at least double-digit pop. Like even if it's mid-teens, low-teens, I know we want more, but if it was 13 homers and 18 steals with a 270 average, I'd be perfectly happy with that from Cabrian Hayes this year.
Yeah, and I think there could the counting stats could be pretty solid as well. He's going to hit high in that order. You know, Ross Roosters even has him projected to hit leadoff. I don't know if that'll come to fruition, but it should be great. That would be great. It should be at least, you know, high on the order. It's, you know, him, Brian Reynolds, a little bit of Sasugo, O'Neill Cruz as well. He'll get up there at some point, but yeah, there's not a lot of other options up there to lead off. And we saw Reynolds had, I think, around 175 combined runs in RBI last year. So you could see, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see if he's hitting leadoff, you know, maybe he flirts with 90 runs and adds, you know, 50 to 60 RBI. So I think he could be that nice, you know, at least a four category guy, good average runs, that power speed blend that you mentioned. I could see 15-15 out of him as well. So yeah, I was never a huge Cabrian Hayes fan coming up through the minor leagues. Thought he was always a little bit overhyped, but I've been buying back in. I have a few shares this year. Just because obviously third base kind of falls off a bit after that kind of range where it's like him and Turner and like Yoan Moncada's in there, like that middle 150-ish, give or take, ADP range. And it kind of falls off quick after that. And a lot of guys I don't like in that 200-plus range. So I always try to get at least one third baseman before that point. And Cabrian Hayes has been one of the guys I've been getting more often than not here. Chris, how about you? What are your thoughts on Cabrian Hayes?
Yeah, I mean, he played all last year with a wrist injury. He had a sprained left wrist, and then he had a cyst on his wrist. So that should be worth noting and the reason why there was minimal power there. And for a fringe power guy like Hayes, when you get those kind of injuries, that's really going to affect you. And it's worth noting it seemed like he was getting healthy towards the end of the year, and that's when he began to steal his bases. I mean, he stole 7 bases in the second half, all in August and September, pretty much. And so great feel to hit there. I think the power is coming, even like sports, and even if we don't see it this year. I mean, he proved last year at the beginning of spring training that he could really scorch the ball. We saw some high EVs, some big home runs there. I think that he's coming around and he should be fully healthy this year, which the only slight concern I have is that he didn't get surgery, but maybe that tells me that everything's fine. Like he's going to be okay. He's had plenty of time for it to recover, but he's such a unique profile at third base that you can't get with most third basemen. In the fact that he hits for solid average, he's going to steal bases, which most third basemen don't, and there's enough power to not kill your team, in my opinion. I wouldn't be surprised to see him reach 18, 20 home runs. Maybe not this year, but I think it's in the tank, and then definitely capable of stealing 10 or more bases with a good average. I think Hayes is a great target at third base. And everyone wants to crap on the Pirates lineup, but you mentioned what Reynolds did. He had 90 runs and RBI last year, so that's worth noting. And the lineup is going to get better, in my opinion. You've got O'Neill Cruz on the way. They're going to get better. And hitting on the top of the lineup, Hayes should be really, really solid. As long as he can stay healthy, I think he's a really solid pick where he's going.
Yeah, maybe the bottom half of the lineup won't be great, but at least that the guys hitting directly behind Hayes or around Hayes, depending where he slots into that lineup, should be pretty solid. And I got huge on Brian Reynolds this year too. So yeah, definitely, definitely a fan of Key Brian Hayes as well. I would love to see him hit a little more, you know, cut that ground ball rate a bit. It was 57% last year, but if he does, you know, if that wrist is okay this year, I could see him flirting with 20. We'll see. Two more corner infielders, at least guys that will be eligible at corner infield this year. A couple of guys that debuted last year. That's Alex Kirilloff of the Minnesota Twins and Andrew Vaughn, who just got completely jerked around all season by Tony La Russa there in Chicago. Both very talented young corner infielders. You know, both were considered top 10 prospects at one time or another, sometimes at the same time. Is there one of these two that you're in on more than others or more than the other for this year, Paul? Like, I'm a big Kirilloff guy, so I lean that way. Do you have any, you know, which way do you lean here?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of both. I really am, but I have been leaning Vaughn. I just want to kind of get a little bit more certainty with the wrist with Kirilloff and kind of see where it's at. I was really, really excited by what he was doing last year. He was really on the cusp of a breakout. It was starting to come through with the pop. Then the wrist popped, and the season was literally over after 59 games, and that stunk because I do like Kirilloff. But we know what wrists can do to power, and so I have played a little bit of a wait and see with him. I think I've gotten just like one share just to kind of make sure, you know, I do have a read that I like him, so I don't want to completely miss the boat. But Vaughn's somebody that I'm really interested in. And I think there's a little bit of kind of laying off of him. The ADP is way down because it wasn't a particularly flashy first season. And I think maybe he deserves a little bit of credit for the difficulty that he went through of being thrust into a brand new position in the outfield, learning that on the fly while learning how to hit major league pitching. That's not easy. You know, it's his job. I'm not saying feel sorry for him, but I look at a 23-year-old putting up a 92 OPS plus, and I'm like, that doesn't bother me that much. I'm kind of okay with that. That's kind of holding your own for 469 plate appearances, right around average there at 92 OPS plus for Andrew Vaughn. I can build off of that. Now, obviously, the big thing is, can he figure out righties in a better capacity? You don't like guys on a short side platoon. That's the part that can be scary. But this guy's a number three overall pick. I like pedigree. I care about it, especially in the early part of a career. You know, 7 years down the line, you know, somebody's 32. I'm not like, well, he was a first round pick. I'm not really touting that as much. But early on right now, I'm like, hey, there's expectations for this guy. There's big time capability, and I still think it could come to fruition. So I really like Andrew Vaughn. I've been taking him more, but I like Kirilloff. I just got to play wait and see on the wrist.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. And I think the kind of moving around in the field of Vaughn gets understated because, you know, I had the same conversation with a good friend of mine years ago about Xander Bogaerts. He was a shortstop coming up. And then they signed Stephen Drew that his rookie year, moved him over to third. I know that's a short to third might not seem like a big difference. It's still the left side of the infield, but it is for a.
And you're doing it at the majors too.
Exactly. Like, it's like it's in AAA.
We act like this is all just so simple. Like whenever we throw dudes at first, like, oh, they'll just play first. Like, hey, this is still the top level of everything. It's all difficult. Even the easiest thing is difficult, especially if you've never done it. And, you know, it's like these clowns that say, well, they're giving you the whole left side of the field. Just take the base hit. Yeah, because it's really that easy to just change how you are as a hitter against 100-mile-an-hour heat and 95-mile-an-hour sliders to just go the other way. Yeah, you get up there and bunt. Let's see what let's see you square around for it. And absolutely. I know that's not fair because like they're not, but you know, I hate when we act like things are simple for players. We want to respect their talent that they can handle things, but that's a transition to move a complete defensive position, infield to outfield, first base to actually having to field, you know, read angles and whatnot. That seems remarkably difficult. So I like Vaughn. I still think there's tons of upside. Both are priced to buy though. I will say that you buy Kirilloff or Vaughn, you're not overpaying for potential, in my opinion. I think both have fair prices. 174 over the last month in Draft Champions for Kirilloff and 239 for Vaughn. Neither of those are cost prohibitive to me.
Yeah, and that Vaughn ADP kind of is stinking up a little bit. It was like more in the 250, 260 range a month or so ago. It's definitely snuck up a little bit here in the last few weeks. And yeah, I'm selling on both these guys. You know, with Vaughn, he still showed some really good quality of contact metrics. He had a 10.9% barrel rate, 91.1 average exit velo, 47.3 hard hit rate. Only struck out 21.5% of the time. He's always been a really professional, polished hitter. So I think if they just maybe he's DH in this year, we'll see how that shakes out. But if he can just get, you know, if they just let him focus on hitting and stop moving him all around the field, I think you could have a really solid season from him. So I'm in on both these guys at their ADP that Paul mentioned for sure. Chris, do you lean one way or the other here?
I love both. I'm slightly concerned about Vaughn's playing time after what happened last year. I mean, you mentioned he got jerked around. He played second base, third base, and he played majority of the time in the outfield, and we know that he's a first base DH type. So I don't know. I'm curious. I know right now, you know, roster resource at least projects him in a platoon. I don't know how it all shakes out, but I mean, you look at the bottom of that lineup and you see Gavin Sheets and Adam Engel and Lurie Garcia. It's hard to imagine a talent like Vaughn can't break through in this lineup. And in the end, talent normally prevails. So I'll bank on the talent, and we see a talented player. And honestly, if you look at what he did last year and you say it was a huge disappointment for him, I think you're wrong considering all circumstances that Vaughn faced last year. So I still think he's worth buying. Kirilloff may have an easier path to playing time, but then again, we've seen the Twins making some moves, and yeah, there's a lot of outfield depth there. So I don't know how that shakes out. So both could have playing time crunches.
And, you know, even getting Cruz gone in Minnesota doesn't just wide open clear the path for Kirilloff to play DH necessarily, because they have Josh Donaldson and Miguel Sano considerations that they don't want them on their feet every day in the field. Yep. So they might want to be cycling that position more as kind of the rotating day off sort of thing. I also want to say just a little throw out there. I love Gavin Sheets. I think he's actually kind of a dude. I think he could rip 25 homers this year. Yeah. So Adam Engel is somebody I'm intrigued by. I want to like him as a power speed guy, but between the two, I'd rather Vaughn play. I know Engel's defense is a lot better, though, so that does hurt. So that the playing time consideration is a great one, Chris, for you to bring up, because that's one that I'm probably not giving enough credence to. I think it is well baked into the price at 239 or what did I say, 250? Whatever, to somewhere in that 230 to 250 range for Vaughn. I think that does cover it a little bit, but you're right. He's not necessarily locked and loaded from day one because Sheets and Engel could make it hard. Now, Engel's more wobbly than Sheets, but I think Sheets, like I said, I know he's UT only, but I have not been afraid to draft him late in drafts right now. I think he can mash.
Oh, he absolutely can mash, and maybe that's it's a platoon at DH. We'll see on that. So, yeah, Sheets definitely has the power, that's for sure. Let's go ahead and take a quick break here, come back on the other side, get into some middle infielders and some outfielders. So we will be right back.
Hey, MEAC fans,
it's time to step into a championship.
The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
All right, welcome back from the break. Let's get into some middle infielders here. We got a lot of fun names to talk about here. Let's start with one that broke out in a big way last season, which we all kind of expected. When you looked at this guy's home road splits throughout his career and then what he did with his new team after he got traded in, I believe it was late May, I think it was, or maybe early June, his stats with his new team basically mirrored his previous, you know, road stats. And that's Willy Adames of the now Milwaukee Brewers, formerly of the Tampa Bay Rays, in 99 games with Milwaukee, 285, 366, 521 slash line with 26 doubles and 20 home runs and 413 plate appearances after a putrid 197, 254, 371 line with in 41 games with Tampa Bay before that trade. Are you buying, Paul, what we saw out of Adames? And you think he's a viable starting shortstop this year?
Oh, fully. Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally in. Adamus was somebody, you know, he actually came from the Tigers in that David Price deal. And I remember Eric Wagenhagen telling me, like, that's the guy you got to watch out for. Yeah, that's the one you might regret. You know, you just got an ace for your favorite team, but keep an eye on Adamus. You might not love that one down the line. And he nailed that because, you know, he went to Flourish and did pretty well in Tampa Bay, all things considered, because he couldn't see there. And he actually mentioned on Chris Rose's podcast, like, I couldn't see at home. I did not like that park. I forget. I think it was with Glasnow in that episode. And Glasnow was actually the one that brought it up. I think Adamus like didn't want to make excuses or whatever and be looking like he was a complainer or anything like that. But then when the subject was broached, he's like, yeah, you know, I really couldn't see the ball. And you look and his road numbers were excellent. He was an all-star on the road. He was dreadful at home. It really did seem to check out. Now, I know some people have said, well, he also had a home road split in Milwaukee too. He went from 500s OPS level with Tampa Bay at home to 734 with Milwaukee in his 261 plate appearances there. And I think he was held back by a 254 BABIP because the power was still there. He still ripped 13 homers with a 214 ISO. This is Willy Adamus at home with the Brewers. So I don't think he has the same home woes there. I think if that BABIP kind of gets back to more of a neutral level somewhere in like the 290 to 300 range, he'll still look solid at home. And he was a god on the road also with Milwaukee. So yeah, I think the full breakout's coming. I'm completely bought in. Obviously, the price is higher than it's ever been for Adamus, but I still find his price to be very fair because of how remarkably deep shortstop is. So even at $1.24, he's the 17th shortstop off the board. I take that all day for Adamus.
I would as well. And he's going right in that. It's like a cluster there in that 115 to 130 range with Dansby Swanson. Jake Cronenworth has eligibility there as well. And Chris Taylor, who's eligible basically everywhere. I think Gleyber Torres is kind of near there, that range. But yeah, I love Willy Adamus. If I got to wait, you know, get my shortstop in that range, he's my favorite. I like him more than Cronenworth, a little more than Swanson, who I do like as well. I even like Adamus more than Carlos Correa this year, you know.
Especially at the costs, because Correa is at 109 before he signs, and we know everyone gets a boost when they sign. There's a free agent discount for everybody. They range depending on who they are. It's not like we don't think he'll sign, but we just don't know. So he's at 109 now. He goes and signs and say it's a hitter-friendly spot. He's going to jump up to 90, he being Carlos Correa. So when you consider the cost difference, I totally agree. But I'll tell you what, Chris, you might be saying the same thing right now. I would take Adamus straight up. I would take Adamus at Correa's price gladly.
I would too. Absolutely. Can you imagine if Correa signs with the Yankees?
Oh, man. He's going up to 75. Maybe even higher than that. Yeah, you might be right. But he's definitely going up to top 75, I would say.
Oh, absolutely.
The Yankee tax is real.
Yes, it absolutely is. Has been forever. I've been playing for a very long time, y'all. 40 years old, playing fantasy since I was like 11.
And can I just say that the first time I heard that you were 40 years old, I thought, I forget who, like, where I heard it, but I thought they were just totally bullshitting me.
It's my girlfriend's favorite parlor game. They're like, guess how old he is. Of course, once you say that to somebody, their mind's kind of like, okay, you're going to want me to say something different here. So they're trying to get to it. But yeah, a lot of people have that reaction. Believe me, you know, don't let the baby face fool you. My back and my hairline are absolutely 40, if not closer to 60. So, you know, I'm definitely feeling it in other avenues, but I do appreciate that.
I hear you, man. I'm only 30. I'll be 32 in a couple months here, but I got two kids as well. So I feel like I think they add like five.
Oh, they definitely do.
10 years.
Yeah, I don't have kids. I'm saying I respect parents and I know that they're adding time that I haven't suffered, you know, so I totally respect that.
Yeah, so like physically, I'm probably 43, 44 at this point. Chris, what are your thoughts on Adamus?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to get him in, honestly, every draft, whether if I don't draft a shortstop early, like I'll take him in the middle infield. You just look at his home road splits. We've mentioned him. And if you want to go back and say, well, he was bad on the road in Milwaukee, most players are worse on the road. It's just a general thing. And it's not just Rockies. Like, can we get out of that stigma? Most players have poor home road splits. It's just the nature of the game.
There's the home comforts. Like, just being at home is a better thing. You're with your family. You're with your significant other. Your food's around you. Just the creature comforts of being home are better.
Yep. And it should tell you everything you need to know, the fact that for his career, Adamus at home in Tampa, at least 223, 290, 374 slash, away 300, 371, 513 slash. So it's insane. The difference is
in the park.
Yep. So even if Adamus hits 280 with 25 home runs, I still think he outperforms Correa. So that'll be interesting to follow this year. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm in all in on Adames.
As am I. Moving on here, we have a couple guys that are a little bit younger than Willie Adames. Though he's only, what is Adames, 26. These next two guys are 24 and 23, respectively. We'll kind of group them together. We had Jazz Chisholm, who had a exciting yet tumultuous debut last year with the Miami Marlins, and O'Neill Cruz, who had a brief cup of coffee, more like a shot of coffee, though he did have a
shot of espresso.
Yeah, shot of espresso. Yeah, exactly. One of those like five, you know, the little 5 hour energy shots or whatever you want to call it. But did hit a home run in his 9 plate appearances with Pittsburgh last year. That's O'Neill Cruz, two very exciting middle infield, young middle infielders that should have a very exciting career, you know, careers, especially for fantasy purposes. We'll start with Jazz Chisholm. You know, came out like a man on fire. You saw him, you know, rising up dynasty rankings to like astronomical levels. I even saw him in top 25 dynasty rankings at one point. And then the downfall came with the approach. So overall, he had a 28.6% strikeout rate last year, really high whiff rate as well, chases outside the zone, but still had 18 home runs, 23 steals. So the power speed was there. It might have been frustrating if you had him all year. There was a lot of ups and downs, but overall, you can't really argue with that. And O'Neill Cruz has shown insane raw power. He's 6'7" listed. He's probably really 7'4". Who knows?
Right.
But this is a guy that's a 30 home run bat, very agile and athletic for his size as well. There's definitely like a double-digit steal guy in there as well. And who knows how much the average he hits for, but very exciting power speed button there as well. So obviously Jazz Chisholm's going much higher this year in drafts than O'Neill Cruz is. Chisholm is going around like pick 75 to 80, 12th shortstop off the board, right in the Jorge Polanco, Corey Seager range. And you got to go down a little bit further to around 210 or so for O'Neill Cruz, who's going right near Brandon Crawford, Josh Rojas, Gavin Lux, and that range as the 26th shortstop off the board. I won't ask you to compare the two because the ADPs are so far apart, but are you targeting either of these two guys in your drafts this year, Paul?
Not really. I have O'Neill Cruz in one league, but I'm a little bit out on Jazz Chisholm this year. Look, I get it. There's the upside there of that explosive profile, but it can also explode on you, right? It's very Javi Baez, and we saw how long it took. You know, we saw kind of the ups and downs before he really got his footing as a superstar player. Now, he came up earlier. He came up at 21, Baez did, had that awful start, you know, 42% strikeout rate as a 21-year-old, then barely played in 2015. I don't remember if he was hurt or if he spent most of that year in the minors. I know he spent some of the year, and then there was also some tragedy that struck early where I believe his sister passed. So he might have missed some time for that with Baez. But then even in 2016, his first full season was kind of like what Jazz did this past year. And then he broke out. Now, is Jazz on that trajectory where of Baez is 2016? And then he's going to jump a level this year where he hits 273 with 23 homers. And well, I guess in 2017, Baez only had 10 steals. People don't want that. Point is, though, with that.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Profile, the strikeouts, the lack of walks, there is volatility. And I'm not really looking to pay full price for that kind of volatility without the track record to know that he can do it over a full season, because you mentioned there were ups and downs. It was really kind of one up and then all the way down, because he had a 969 OPS in April, Chisholm did, and then never higher than 705 the rest of the year. Excuse me. He did still have 14 homers and 14 steals, I think, the rest of the way, which is something, right? He's still giving you some power and speed, and it was after that injury that he had. But I'm a little bit nervous by the fact that we've really only seen one good month out of Chisholm. I don't want to pay top 80 for that. It's not the risk I want to take. I'm a guy who takes Alberto Mondesi, though. So the Chisholm backers could say, listen, this guy's taking his own kind of risk over here. And it's true. I'm taking the kind of risk I'm comfortable with. It's all about risk management, what you want to manage. I don't necessarily want what Chisholm's offers right now. I want to see it more before I'm paying that premium. We've already talked about how unbelievably deep shortstop is. So it's a pass for me with Chisholm. With Cruz, much cheaper. I do think that we're penciling him in for like full-time playing time, a little preemptively though. We talk about the shot of espresso he had in the majors. It was like three espressos in AAA, by the way, because he was only there for a week, but he hit five homers. Like the dude was like, it was the most insane week ever. So they rewarded him with a couple games at the majors, it felt like, because he had a really good year at AA. It seemed like the AAA was supposed to be the reward, but he was so good for that week when they're like, well, we'll give you a taste of the bigs. So I love what he can do. I think there's power and speed there with some batting average potential, but I think the O'Neill Cruz expectation of like full-time player from day one might be a little bit overblown. So I've peeled back on my O'Neill Cruz exposure a bit. So neither of them are really winding up on many teams. I have one O'Neill Cruz right now, and that'll probably be it for my entire allotment between those two the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think I have one share of Chisholm where he fell a bit. I was like, you know what? Let's give it a shot here to see what happens this year. I don't know if I have any of the O'Neill Cruz yet, even though I do like O'Neill Cruz. But one thing I was looking at earlier, you know, we talk a lot about K-minus walk rate for pitchers, but I look at it for hitters as well. And for hitters with 500-plus plate appearances last year, there were 135 of them. Chisholm had the sixth worst K-minus walk rate at 21.9%. The five worst going up the list, Miguel Sano, Tyler O'Neill, Adam Duvall, Adelis Garcia, and the aforementioned Javier Baez, of course, who is the king of that. Well, Mondesi's the king, but he never gets enough plate appearances to qualify on a list like this. But yeah, like I'm intrigued by both, and especially Jazz Chisholm, obviously. But I think it breaks down to, you know, more so I like going a little bit more safer in this range of my draft. And looking at the other options around, like if I'm looking for a shortstop in that pick 75 to 90 range or so, I've been finding myself going, you know, some Jorge Polanco in that range. I love Corey Seager in that range as well. So I've been going a lot more that way than with Jazz Chisholm. If he falls to like closer to 100, which usually doesn't happen, his max pick is 114. So, and his min pick's 49. So he's more, you know, on the higher end than the lower end of that range. So I don't know. I just don't like, I think if he was going 20 picks later, I'd be okay with it, but it's a little too much risk for that part in your draft. Cause you're in a 15 teamer. That's your fifth or sixth guy on your team and maybe your third or so hitter. So I like a little more stability in that part of my draft. But how about you, Chris? Are you in on either of these two this year?
Not really. I just wonder, like, I feel like O'Neill Cruz draft cost got inflated by like 100 plus spots based on him coming up and hitting that ball like 118.6 mile an hour.
Easy.
Like that just shot his ADP up so much. Like, and you have to wonder, like, if you take out the last couple of weeks of the AAA and the two games in the majors, like, would he even be drafted in like a 30 round draft? I don't know. But
and would Roster Resource have him penciled in as a starting shortstop? And true. I love Jason. He does amazing, amazing work, right? But it is still just kind of him calling together info and putting together his best guesses. And so he's like, hey, Cruz could be the guy. So we don't even know yet if teams are going to stop doing the first couple week manipulation thing and let somebody like that. Plus, I would say that the Pirates actually have some pretty decent leeway to not have him up, and it wouldn't even necessarily be blatant service time manipulation. I'm sorry, 29 plate appearances, even with a 370 WRC plus, does not mean you've mastered AAA. So if they wanted to send him back down there for a few weeks, I think they could justify that more so than any, you know, so many of the other ones we've seen. Chris Bryant one's obviously the biggest one, but tons of others where they're like, we got to send him down for defense or whatever, and then they're back in 10 days. Cruz would actually make some sense to get sent down because he hasn't really mastered AAA. He didn't play there long enough.
Yep. Yeah. I think he played six games there, if I recall.
Yeah. Or and seven hit five games. Homers.
Yeah. It was insane. But yeah, it was still only six games.
And then the steamer projection when it first dropped had him at like 24-18. It was like, oh my gosh.
With like a 285 average.
Hype train getting out of control there.
Yes. But the hype train got elevated really quick. And so, no, I think I took Cruz late in a best ball. He fell in a best ball draft. So I just took him. I was like, we'll see where it goes. If he's a backup, like some big weeks, whatever. But Jazz, I'm pretty much out. I don't love the draft price by any means. There's too much volatility here, and I think the floor is where he could end up back in AAA, which is crazy, but yeah, I'm maybe not AAA, but the bench at least. Like he's got that low of floor where if he doesn't hit, and everybody always just remembers like the home run off DeGrom was epic. I mean, the off 101 mile an hour fastball that he pulled into like the third deck was awesome. But there's so many other moments where Jazz just didn't have it. And you mentioned the splits, the monthly splits, and you mentioned the strikeout minus walk rate. There's enough reason here for in volatility for me to not buy into the cost. So no, I don't think I've Jazz on any team so far this year, and I don't plan to at the cost. Like, he would have to drop near like after pick like 125 probably for me to consider him. But yeah, right now I'm out.
Yeah, if I wanted some, you know, a high upside volatility guy in that range, I'd go one round sooner and get Javier Baez, who has at least shown a much longer track record of success for our fantasy purposes. So, and I'm not even targeting him much at all, but I'd rather go for him than a guy like Jazz Chisholm, that's for sure. Last two middle infielders we'll discuss here, and I'm going to make Paul pick one of these two. We'll pair them together here. We'll do it at ADP, not straight up, just at ADP this year. The first one is the former Uber prospect, number one prospect for the last 2 years, Wander Franco, who came up last year and after a slow start, really turned it on, finishing 288, 347, 463 with 7 home runs and 2 steals in 308 plate appearances. His current ADP, this is since February 1st on NFBC, is at 57 as the ninth shortstop off the board, right between Lindor and Javier Baez. And then the other one, Mr. Robert Andrew Witt Jr., a.k.a. Bobby Witt Jr., who has yet to make his debut, but will either on opening day or shortly thereafter this year, coming off a 33-homer, 29-steal season in the upper minors, where he hit 290, 361, 576. He's one of the top two prospects, along with Julio Rodriguez, in baseball right now. And his ADP, obviously a little bit further down, but still top 100 at around pick 94 on average. So gun to your head, Paul, you got to pick Wander at 57 or whatever it was. So like tail end of the fourth.
It's Witt. I'll tell you that.
It's Witt. Okay. There we go.
Having to say there they are. It's definitely Witt. And it, part of it is just that he's cheaper. And it's not that I'm even like, it's not that I like hate Wander, but I did a piece where I said, five players I'm removing from my draft board. We've seen this more, as some of the NFBC folks have kind of started to, push this out and talk about how they really call their list down to guys that are draftable for them and actually outright remove guys. And I'm like, that's something that I'm looking to do as well, kind of really tighten up players I'm interested in. And Wander was somebody I did remove from my list because I just don't really see him fitting in to anything I'm doing. He doesn't go late enough to be like, oh, he kind of fits the plan now because he's a foundational piece at pick 60, in the top 55 there. And my concern is that it's like the year before with him, right? Like, we had Vlad's breakout year last year. I feel like we're in 2020 Vlad territory right now, where it's like, I think he's going to be good, Wander Franco. I think he's going to be like a good baseball player. I don't know that he's going to be like a fantasy beast, though. In fact, I'm pretty concerned that he's not. I think there's going to be good batting average, but like, what's there for the speed? What's there for the power? Don't get me wrong. Average with a ton of runs and some decent ribbies, that's going to play. Like, it's not going to kill anybody, but I want that game changing impact in power and or speed when I'm taking a top 60 pick. And I don't see that from Wander right now. I definitely don't see it with the speed. Maybe the power gets there quicker than anticipated. He will be 21 this year. I'm seeing it more at 22, 23, but maybe the power's there off rip and he hits like upper 20s. And I'm like, okay, then I kind of look like a goof if he hits 290, 20 something, 85 ribbies and 110 runs. Obviously that'd be amazing. Even with 2 steals, I don't think we're getting there yet, though. I look at a projection that's in the 290s with the average, upper teens homers, 80 ribs, 90 runs, and then between 8 and 10 steals. And I'm like, that is not bad, but it's not what I want at that pick. So for me, he's a great, Wander Franco is a great example of the difference between earning a dollar value and being the right, earning a dollar value that matches the ADP or being the right pick for a team fit at ADP. He'll probably earn the dollars or very close to it for where he's being drafted. But will he fit the team properly to give you what you need to compete in the leagues? And I just don't see it.
Yeah, I'm there with you. We've kind of talked about this at times before on this podcast, how I made a trade in my home keeper league where I gave up Wander Franco, got back Witt, and also got Brendan Woodruff, which is a deal I'm absolutely ecstatic with. So I think this might be peak value for Wander. And yeah, he could blow through it. I wouldn't put that past him because the average floor is just so incredibly high. Mm-hmm. Even a 21-year-old, like if you told me I had to put $100 of my own money down and I could pick five guys that would hit 300 this year, he'd probably be one of the five. Like he's that good of a hitter. And maybe, you know, I've said maybe he gets up to Ozzie Albies levels of power speed. That's probably the high end. Probably he's a little bit less than that. Maybe he's more like 20 and 6 or 7 steals as opposed to Albies 25 and 15 or somewhere in that range. So, yeah, I would go Witt as well. Like I said, Witt is a guy that could be, you know, fast forward 3 years or so. We could be talking about him as a first round pick in fantasy. Like he's got that level of upside where he could be 25 plus on both with a solid average and plenty of counting stats. I think that Kansas City lineup would be pretty damn good long term. They have a lot of intriguing hitters coming up in the next year or two. So I would also go Witt as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if you look at like the Razzball player rate or end of the year. I wouldn't be surprised if Witt was ahead of Wander. I really wouldn't. So
especially because how valuable steals are. And that's really where he can get him. He could give back the average, but have so many more steals that match his pop or exceed the pop that it could totally flip the table for Witt. And I agree. I didn't really say much positive about Witt. Power speed guy looks ready. Had an amazing season at double and triple A. Should be up day one. I hope that that we are in a better place where teams don't do the service time manipulation, because I don't think they have it. This is one where they have no justification. What are they going to send him down for 2 weeks for that they think is going to get fixed? Nothing.
Exactly. Now, Chris, I know you're not really targeting either of those just from, you know, knowing you and talking with you, but are you going to make it a clean sweep here? If you had to pick one of the two this year, you going Witt as well?
Yeah, it's pretty easy Witt, in my opinion. If you want to draft Wander's profile, just take Brian Reynolds 40 picks later.
Yes.
They're going to produce the same stats, in my opinion.
And can we talk about that a little bit with Brian Reynolds, since we kind of had a little tangent here, just a quick tangent.
Yes, absolutely.
Can we stop pretending he doesn't have any upside?
Yeah,
my biggest issue is like
that whole Twitter thing the other day. Was
the Bellinger combo.
I'm sitting here. I was at work. I'm trying to like not pull my hair out at work. I'm like, what is this?
Like this crusty we're treating him like he's this crusty 8-year vet who has like this floor, but that's it. No, he's 27. And, you know, Justin and I like to make fun of, I don't know. You said you're 32. Chris, how old are you? I don't know if you share that.
I'm 28.
Yeah. Okay. 28 last. So you might be too young to remember the age 27 as a breakout thing. Eric, you might be too, to be honest, but this used to be a big thing. Like, because it was the power prime was somewhere in like the 26 to 30 range, but 27 was like the focus number. I'm not saying that is why Reynolds has upside. I just want to be clear for our old heads out there. That's not why when I mention his age. All I'm saying, though, is it's a 27-year-old who's still young, still in his prime, broke out in 2019 at age 24. I put no stock in 2020 at all, not just because he was bad. I don't show me somebody who was great in 2020. I don't put stock in that. And I was wrong on Teoscar Hernandez not to put stock in it, but I didn't think he changed his skills enough, so I didn't put stock in that as a gain for him. But I put nothing in the 189 that Brian Reynolds hit. He had a 231 BABIP. If you don't think that would have regressed with four more months, then you never watched baseball. And then comes back last year, adds on to the 2019 breakout, and we're just painting him as a floor guy who doesn't have upside. I feel like he could add more power. He's already a batting average stud. And as you guys mentioned earlier, he went 90-90 with the Pirates last year. They should be a tick better. He could at least repeat the 90-90, if not add to that. So I love Brian Reynolds. I think that's a great call out. It's a different position, but we know shortstop's deep. So if you really want Wander's profile, but you aren't, you know, you're nervous about whether or not he like breaks out, I'm agreeing with you. Go Reynolds a good bit later.
Yeah, he's going to like 50 picks later. It's like right around. Yeah. That's why I originally, the one that started the whole Reynolds versus Bellinger beef was I was looking at ADP and I saw him and Cody Bellinger right back to back. And I'm like, why? This is insane. Like, I'm not saying Bellinger can't bounce back and all, but Reynolds is so, it was more so like, why is Bellinger going this late? Like, he should easily be
30 to 40.
Yeah, Reynolds. Why is he going this late? He should be easily 30 to 40 picks higher. Mm-hmm. Like you look at his profile. Look at the overall stat line. It's not that far from, I'll even use a Red Sox here, Xander Bogaerts. You look at the overall 5x5. It's pretty damn close. So obviously I would take Xander, but is there a 70 or what? I don't know what Xander's going, probably in the 30s if I had to guess. But I don't know. Reynolds is going super late. And that kind of segues us into Cody Bellinger, who's on our list as well. You know, Bellinger, I don't know. He's intriguing. He's not a breakout, but I put him on this list because obviously one of the most talked about names, and especially after that whole back and forth we had on Twitter a couple of days ago with him and Brian Reynolds. But where are you at? I know where you're at in comparison to Brian Reynolds with Bellinger, but where are you at on Bellinger in general? Like, do you think that ADP is fine? You buy him back in? Where are you at, Paul?
Yeah, I am okay with it. And that was the thing about that convo, was I was advocating for Reynolds, but I wasn't an anti-Bellinger guy. I really was kind of neutral participant in terms of the two players in question, but I was supporting the fact that Reynolds deserved a lot more love than he was getting. I felt like he was being tossed aside, whereas there was a lot of dreaming on Bellinger returning to his 19 level, which I think there's such a small chance of that happening that it's barely worth talking about, right? That is a career year of the highest order. We see guys have it. Returning to that level is very difficult. I can look at 17, 18, and even 20, where he was a 113 WRC plus. Again, I don't put much in the 20 season at all, but add that into those other two seasons for about two full seasons, because he did miss some time in 2017. He can get back up there in the 120s, 130s with his WRC plus, but back to stop talking about the 47, 15, 305 season.
Thank you, yes.
Like that's the chance of that happening is so small that it's barely worth talking about. But do I think he can get back to upper 20s, low 30s homers if the shoulder's right and he's healthy with like a 260 average and then great runs and ribbies and a chip in double digit steal, not chip in, like double digit is more than chip in, but like double digit steals as well? Yes, I do believe Cody Bellinger can get back, but I think Brian Reynolds is better. I'm taking Brian Reynolds over him very easily. And that's why that combo there, I thought gave short shrift to Reynolds while covering up all the blemishes of Bellinger as though he's magically healed, which we don't even really know.
Yeah. And what I find funny is people were like, coming to his defense, like, all these injuries, if he wasn't injured, I'm like, well, that you got to factor that in. Like,
yeah, because durability
is the thing. You got to staying on the field. It's half the battle. And he's had shoulder and knee. Like, there's been multiple injuries here, multiple different parts of the body that can factor both power and speed for him. Well, yeah, I'm definitely like, I don't think it's terrible. I don't have many shares. I think I might have one this year, but I don't have many shares. But I don't think the ADP is egregious by any stretch of the imagination, especially if he does get back to that. You know, so let's say it's, 27 and 11 with a average, maybe it's 250-ish. Like that, I think that'll return a positive return on investment. At that. Yeah. And obviously, even if he's hitting sixth or seventh in that Dodgers lineup, that's like, fourth or fifth in most other lineups. It's a deep lineup. So you'll still get plenty of run scoring opportunities there. But I'm not 100% out on Bellinger. I think this, in a 12 or 15 teamer, there's got to be half the league that likes him more than me. So that's why I don't have many shares of him. And there's a lot of the outfielders in this range. So we'll talk about a couple of them that I'd rather go after here. But Chris, where are you at on Bellinger?
I think my stance at this point, I think that his value and perceived value is still really inflated by two elite months that he had during his MVP season. And after that, while he was good, he wasn't elite. And I don't think he's getting back to the first round level that we saw. Even there's upside. There is upside in Bellinger. I don't know where the batting average lies. Like, I don't see him hitting above 260 personally. But I don't know. I'm not drafting. I'm okay with the cost. I'm not like going overboard saying like I'm drafting him expecting him to return third round value. No, I'm not doing that. But if he's healthy, I think he should be fine. And I like the spot. I think he's obviously got big power. He can steal you some bases, but I'm not going overboard and saying that he's going to be a first round talent again.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of right there with you. Like, there's some bounce back potential overall, but can we, and like what Paul said, like, is there a sliver of a chance? Like, I wouldn't 100% rule him out being like a top 25, 30 pick again, but it is, I'm like, less than 1%.
Barely worth talking. Like, once you display a skill, you own it. I agree with that adage, that the Ron Chandlerism. I understand the premise behind that, but a lot of things have changed since Cody Bellinger displayed those skills, including multiple injuries that we do not know are cleared up. And so that's all it was that I was trying to push back on. And it was a cordial conversation there. It was a good back and forth there with the Bellinger versus Reynolds folks. I just thought that, even at the end, though, they still really weren't given any ground when we were trying to lay out like what Reynolds could do and the fact that there is upside. But hey, that's fine. We all value players differently. If we all did it the same, this game would be boring as heck. Let's be honest.
Exactly. Absolutely. That's why I had a similar conversation with a Yankee fan at a Red Sox game a couple years ago, where we were like, hey, if we all liked the same team, it'd be boring, right?
This would have no spice to it, no fun whatsoever. Exactly. So I do appreciate that aspect.
Yeah, it was definitely a good conversation as well. That was really fun. But getting past Bellinger here to a guy that is probably one of the top five most talked about players in the history of this podcast. Mostly that's my
that makes it good.
mostly my influence podcast there. But I want to get your take on Jared Kelenic here, Paul, because obviously I don't know what the best word to describe his 2021 season was. Atrocious, disappointing, all of the above, but showed some signs later in the year when he made some adjustments. And in September, he only hit 248, but had 7 home runs, 3 steals, 20 RBI, 19 runs. He's going around, 125 or so on average. Is that a fair ADP for him this year, do you think?
I think it's all right. I guess I was kind of hoping for a bigger discount as somebody who believes in Kelenic and was bought in last year and wants to get back in this year and will get back in. I have, in fact. Another thing that I think, you're going to see 248, 331, 524. People might be like, oh, well, that's what you're touting. I'm like, well, yeah, first off, it's much, much better than anything he did during the year. But also, if you were watching the Mariners a lot, I know not everyone can watch every game. I get paid literally to watch baseball. I'm very, very lucky. So I get to kind of, dive in on multiple games a night. I was watching a lot of Mariners games. They were a very exciting team, yep. A lot of fun players. And I was bought in on what they were doing there in their chase. The at-bats were so much better from him, from Kelenic. Like you could see the growth if you'd watched anything pre-September versus the September at-bats. He'd still have an occasional one where he'd get dusted in 3 pitches and slam his bat because he knew that he kind of messed up and he hadn't taken his new game plan to the dish and things. But you could really see it in the process. At least that's how I felt there. I don't think that's confirmation bias of just matching his numbers to the approach. The strikeout rate was down. Everything looked a lot better. Some of his walks in August, Kelenic had a 10% walk rate then. I felt some of that was passivity. He was just trying to get on base. So he's just kind of taking pitches that he could have definitely done damage with. He hit 196 that month. It was a disaster. He had another 10% walk rate in September. But again, it came with a lot more power, a lot more patience and attacking the pitches that he felt he could hit. So his strikeouts felt a little bit more earned as well because they were good at bats for him. So I saw a lot of growth there in season. I'm going to say the same thing about a guy we're going to talk about soon. The in-season growth was really impressive. I'm back in on Kelenic and I'm going to pay the price. I don't think it's too egregious. It is still a pretty fair, it's still a pretty expensive price, but that's just the market tightening up. Too often in past years, the second a rookie fails, the fantasy community discards him. It still happens, but with Kelenic, they've realized let's not completely discard him. We moved his price down into the 130s, which is a discount, but you're still paying something. That's still a real pick for your team that you need things to happen for.
I have a feeling that if I didn't exist, his ADP would be like 20 spots lower. I might have a lot,
Eric.
So this might be a little bit of my fault, but a couple of things I keep going to, like that even through, and you mentioned, I didn't have a chance to watch all the Seattle games, but definitely watched a lot of video. Obviously, Kelenic's one of my boys, so I definitely agree that the changes in September were legit. So he definitely looked a lot better, a lot more comfortable at the plate. And even through the struggles, like even if you factor in the entire body of work, he was still on like a 22, 23 homer, 10 steal pace. He had a barrel rate right around 10%, hard hit rate right around 40%, and made those improvements later in the year. So the arrow was definitely trending up, and I just hope that carries over into this year because I still think he could be a top 50 overall player that hits 25 to 30 home runs, 12 to 15 steals, and a solid, maybe it won't be 280 plus, but maybe 260, 270 with a 330, 340 OBP or something like that. So solid enough, they won't kill you. Plus some good counting stats. I think Seattle's going to be a sneaky good offense this year, and they'll add Julio Rodriguez at some point midseason. So just keep getting better and better. So yeah, I am definitely in on that ADP. I did think it'd be a little bit lower. Like I thought about 150, 160 if I had to guess before the draft started up. But yeah, I think I was hoping too, obviously. But I still have him on roughly a third to 40% of my team so far. So obviously I'm buying back in. That shouldn't be a shock to anybody. Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I'm definitely more in Dynasty than I am redraft. Obviously, the upside's still there for Dynasty. And like you mentioned, I think 30-15 is completely in the cards for Kelenic. I'm skeptical about the batting average and where it's going to fall this year, which is my biggest hesitancy. I do think he's priced fairly given the upside. And you just imagine if he had a decent season last year, even I think the cost would be 50 picks higher, most likely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. Just because of the prospect hype there. I mean, you look, if J-Rod comes
where
up.
Where Jazz is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You think, really, what's the difference? I mean, I don't know. It seems weird to me that when you mention that now that Jazz is going 50 spots higher or even more than that. So in that aspect, it's more than a fair price for Kelenic, and especially given the upside that he offers. I've been going different directions normally in that range, which is really the only reason I don't have a lot of him. But I do think it's a fair cost, and I think that we saw rock bottom last year. I don't think we're going to see that again. So that it can only go up from there. And knowing about Kelenic, he's a hard worker, and he's going to make sure that that doesn't happen again. He's going to make sure that he bounces back strong.
Yeah, that's the thing with Kelenic. He's very driven. He's like chip on the shoulder type of guy from what I've seen. So, yeah, he knows how bad he was. Like, I don't think he knows that. He's going to work his ass off to get there. I fully believe that. So, definitely feeling confident in Kelenic bouncing back in a pretty big way this year. Let's go over to your Detroit Tigers there, Paul. Very exciting outfielder with one of my favorite names in the game, Mr. Akil Baddoo. Last year in 461 plate appearances, 13 home runs, 18 steals, hit .259, had 48 steals in 237 minor league games. So always had that nice desire to run with a high success rate as well at 80%. Where are you at on Baddoo this year? Do you think he's going to be, you know, the next nice little power speed guy here that can go like, you know, 15, 20?
Yeah, I really do. I love Akil Baddoo. For those that don't know, I'm a Tigers fan. I try to manage my bias, right? There's no way to perfectly manage it. We all have biases. Anyone that tells right. you that I'm unbiased, they're lying. Not maybe not maliciously lying, but you have biases. They're inherent. They're guaranteed. The fact that I watch the Tigers damn near every day, that is a bias that I know more about them. And I don't say that to like brag. It's like when you're gonna watch them, you're gonna have more feelings about them, more takes, you know, more analysis. Hopefully it's good. And I try to make sure that I don't overrate my Tigers too much. Hasn't been much to rate at all in past years, but now we're finally turning the corner and I'm really excited. And I'm a wee guy too. Cry about it. I really don't care. I hate people. The only thing worse than people that say we for their favorite team are the people who cry about it. I'm not on the payroll, but we are going to do well this year and I'm going to hit four.
I agree, Paul. I agree.
That drives me nuts.
Can I cry though if Freddie Freeman leaves Atlanta? Is that
absolutely acceptable? Yeah,
I would cry.
That's your team. That, you know, I would be bummed as hell, man. I don't.
Especially if he goes to the Yankees, that'd be a double negative.
Or the Dodgers. And I don't care either. Yeah. Either team.
I mean, I cried when Barry Sanders retired because he just quit. He realized how crappy the Lions were. He's like, I quit. And we did it twice. We made two of the best players at their positions in football. Sorry, Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson quit football. So yeah, I have cried because of sports, and I'm not above it. Akil Baddoo. Very, very happy with his in-season progression. This is a Rule 5 pick. Comes up, has that flashy April, and it, to me, total fraud. I'm like, this is nothing here. Cool name, it's fun or whatever, but like he had like a huge BABIP. He was striking out a ton. There wasn't really anything to see there as far as I was concerned with Baddoo when he was first going off. But he made amazing in-season strides that really, really impressed me with Akil Baddoo. And if you kind of look at what he did April versus the rest of the season, you can kind of see it. In April, he had a 44% K rate, y'all. That's some Javi Baez first year stuff with a 3% walk rate. So like I said, I thought that fast start was a total fluke. In season, he changed. And from May 1st on, 24% strikeout rate, 11% walk rate. I'll take that play profile all day. That was a 756 OPS. I would even take that. His next step would be to improve against lefties. He did have a 523 OPS against them. He will lose some time there. But I'm okay with a strong side platoon guy who showed that kind of advancement with power and speed. You can do enough with power and speed in a strong side platoon that even missing the occasional games, I don't think he'll miss every game against lefties, but he'll miss a decent number unless he improves against them. I can take that from Akil Baddoo. I think in 500-something plate appearances, he can be an absolute monster this year. He's one of my favorites. I've been picking him everywhere, and I think he's got real breakout upside. I've already got him in four of my seven leagues that I've drafted, four of seven so far.
There you go. And the price tag isn't too bad either. He's going right around pick 160 or so, like the 40th-ish outfielder off the board. Like similar range, like right Alex Verdugo, Hunter Renfroe, Adelis Garcia, Avisal Garcia, Joey Gallo, or some other names kind of in that range. And
you look at Adelis Garcia, right? Had his power speed breakout last year. I take Baddoo all day just because of I think the plate skills are markedly better.
Absolutely. Maybe there's higher. You could argue there's a higher ceiling with Adelis Garcia a little bit, but much lower
floor. Especially because he'll play every day because he has elite defense, and I don't think he has as much of a platoon issue. So you're right, that there could be more there from Garcia if he tightened up some of the play skill stuff. But he's also a 28-year-old breakout. I take Badu 10 out of 10 times there.
As would I. And I have Akil Badu in a few leagues. I don't think I have any shares of Garcia this year. I don't think I will. Chris, how about you? What are you feeling about Badu and this range of outfielders in general?
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan. I think that when you're looking at speed, like, he offers speed that doesn't hurt you in any other categories, really. And that's pretty rare to find where he's being drafted. So he's kind of unique in that aspect, where his ADP is that you can get the power, speed, serviceable batting average too. People want to talk platoon risk. I don't really see him being platoon personally. I think he's going to hit the top of that lineup pretty much every day, and he's going to provide you good stats across the board. So I think it's a great pick where he's going, and yeah, I'm all over it.
As am I. The outfield is actually pretty intriguing. Like, Victor Reyes, he kind of fell flat, but yeah. Robbie Grossman's another one I kind of like, especially in OBP formats. They'll add Riley Green. We'll talk about him in a little bit here. They'll add him early on this year. So that's a nice looking outfield there in Detroit that are all pretty young. Well, Grossman's 32, but Badu's only 23. Green, I think, is 22. So yeah, you get a nice little outfield there for the next foreseeable future in Detroit there.
I'm excited. You know, Derek Hill could be his obvious platoon partner because he plays strong defense too, being Badu. But I agree, like, there is a chance that Badu avoids it. Like, I think even if he can be in the mid to high 600s with his OPS, which still isn't great, I think that'd be enough to avoid the platoon. 523 is untenable, which is what he had last year. But if he can get up into the mid to high 600s and kind of get that OBP above 300 against lefties, I do think he can earn more of that playing time there. And then Badu can avoid a straight platoon.
Yep, no, I agree.
As do I. All right, we'll hit these last two outfielders a little quicker here. As someone asked Paul about Riley Green and Francisco Torkelson a little bit before we close up the show. Two more outfielders that are going a little bit later in drafts that are getting some traction here as breakout picks that are going a good amount apart in drafts. But first off, Jesus Sanchez of the Miami Marlins kind of had a interesting minor league career, showed some average here, some speed here, some power here, never at the same time, which is very frustrating as a prospect analyst on that side of things. Like, how do you value this guy? But I think it looks like the power is going to be the one that plays the most. He didn't steal at all last year in 251 plate appearances, but had 14 home runs, hit 250, definitely has that raw power, 30 home run type of bat. And then Bradley Zimmer, who was a guy that Chris wrote up 2 months ago at this point, I think, on Fantrax HQ about the gains he made and some of the power speed blend that he has. So I guess I'll just ask you really quick about these two in general, Paul. Do you find yourself targeting either Jesus Sanchez or Bradley Zimmer in your drafts?
Yeah, I'm actually in on both, and different reasons that they offer. I actually haven't gotten Sanchez anywhere. I just noticed that, but I'm open to taking him. I think the power's there. You're going to get probably a batting average hit. He hit 251 last year, despite the 31% strikeout rate. I would plan for lower. I'd probably take him expecting a 235 average with big power, but I like Jesus Sanchez. I think that this year could be a bit of a breakout for him. And Zimmer, you know, I've been listening to Zimmer get talked about for like 32 years with my podcast co-host Justin Mason, who absolutely loves him. Can you believe that Zimmer's only 29? Like, you know, you can talk about prospect fatigue. He's been around forever, and he's actually a college product. That makes it even crazier coming out of the University of San Francisco. But he's been around since 2014, still just 29. Got to find some health and got to rein in the swing and miss a bit. But if so, I do think he can be a cheap double-double, which is, you know, 10-plus homers and steals. So I do like Zimmer a bit. I've gotten him in a couple leagues already, two draft and holds, as like my sixth or seventh outfielder.
Yeah, he almost did that last year. He had 8 home runs, 15 steals in 348 plate appearances. And, you know, obviously there's not much in his way in Cleveland, so he should at least get a shot if he can keep that spot. We'll see. But he could be hitting 150 by the middle of May and then be, you know, optioned or DFA'd or benched, whatever it may be. So. But Chris, I know you've talked about Zimmer a bit here, but are you in on either of these two guys? Or more so, are you in on Jesus Sanchez at his ADP?
Yeah, I do like it. I think there's just the power upside there is really nice. And I don't think he'll kill you in batting average either, which makes him a reasonable target where he's going. So you still get the power. He obviously has huge power. We saw last year when he came up, hit 14 in 251 plate appearances on top of mashing in AAA prior to coming up as well. So he's a strong potential out like a breakout candidate. I don't think he's going to be like a huge, he's never going to post like high average, but you know, if he hits 260 with 30 home runs, I'd say that's a solid return on investment where you get him. And so that's why I'm in on him there. His approach is slightly questionable, so we'll see if how that develops. He's still young. He can definitely develop that. I mean, he was just 23 last year, just turned 24 this offseason, so there's plenty of time for him to really still develop. And with Zimmer, like you mentioned, he's going so late, and the power is easily there. We know he has speed, too. He really popped to me when I started doing the exit velocity research and looking at the percentiles. And you look at his 90th percentile exit velocity last year, it ranked 13th in all of baseball. Like, that stood out to me pretty significantly. Like, he constantly hit the ball hard in the 90th percentile, and it really stood out. So that's when he began to pop, and I really began to dive in on him more. The power speed's easily there. The contact rate is horrific. The strikeout rate's not good. But, man, if he can just increase the contact rate a little bit and get to like 70%, which is still bad, but I think he can really tap into that power speed a little more. And worst case, like where you're drafting him, you can afford to cut him. The reward really outweighs the risk where he's going. Yeah. So why not take a shot on a power speed guy like Zimmer there?
Yeah, I think he's going around like pick 400 or so.
He's post 400 all the time.
So cheap.
Yeah, for that. Yeah, and if it doesn't work out, you didn't use a high pick. Burn a high pick on him. So whatever. Yeah, I definitely agree that the potential reward vastly outweighs the risk here. We'll close out the show. We couldn't have a Detroit Tigers fanatic like Mr. Spore and not ask him about two of the most exciting prospects in baseball. Spencer Torkelson, Riley Green. One's a corner infielder, one's an outfielder. Both should be up very early this year. How excited is it as a Tigers fan, Paul? How excited are you about these two guys? And have you found yourself targeting either of them in your drafts this year?
Yeah, I'm through the roof excited about both of them coming up this year. Really should have both of them up for a good amount of time, barring anything kind of unforeseen. I haven't gotten either in drafts yet. And it's not necessarily that I'm not targeting either. It's just that they happen to go when I'm kind of looking at other things. But I do still have a handful of drafts, and I got to come out with at least one of each. Just because not just because they're Tigers, but because I believe that they can be big, and I don't want to see, I'd rather not see a couple of big breakouts on my favorite team, and then I don't have a little taste of it for my fantasy leagues. And that's one of the benefits of being a multi-leaguer is you can kind of get shares of players, whereas if you're in one or two leagues, it's kind of like your guys for the summer, and that's it. You can't always spread out and make sure you're in on everything. So I understand the differences there. As a multi-leaguer, I have that opportunity. But I'm looking at the two, and I know there's a lot of Riley Green love, and I totally get it. I don't think it's unfounded. But I wonder what you think his strikeout rates are going to be at the majors, because that has been one thing where I hear like a lot of batting average coming up with the power developing, a little bit of speed. But I see 27, 28% strikeout rates with 12, 13% swinging strike rates. And I'm wondering, will there be some swing and miss at the majors as he kind of figures things out and then settles that down? Meanwhile, with Torque, he's actually had better swings and misses, swing and miss rates and everything. Even though his batting average went down 312, 263, 238 as he went from high A, double A, triple A. I don't worry about that. I'm looking at the strikeout rates and swinging strike rates. Swinging strike rate held or got better. Strikeout rate actually was its lowest in high A, it was 20%, and then it was 20% again in triple A. I love the power. I'm taking Torque over Green, open to both. Very curious your thoughts, though, Eric, on the swing and miss for Green, year one specifically.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a concern. It wasn't like this was a thing just when he got to AAA. It was both his K rates in AA and AAA were right around the same, around 27.5%. So definitely is an issue for sure. And it's something that, even in his first year, I think the K rate's always been a bit higher than anticipated when he came out of the draft a few years back. So, yeah, I'm people kind of lauded him as like, oh, maybe this guy could hit 290, 300. I don't know if that's there. I think maybe it's more, 275, give or take, either way, which is still very good. That's still a definitely impact average, especially with the 25 home runs and 20 steals that he could bring to the table and a lot of counting stats, but obviously not this year. But I think if he's up by, let's say, the end of May and he gets at least two-thirds of the season in, you could see him, flirt with 2015 or something like that, but maybe the average is a little bit lower. Maybe it's only 250-ish this year because of the K rate. I'm not super concerned by it long term, but I do think the average maybe needs to be scaled back a bit. Chris, what are your thoughts?
This reminds me of Kelnick, where we got really hype on the average, like thinking he's going to hit 300, but you look at the contact rates and they're just not there for Green. I mean, in AA last year, 68.7%, and then in AAA, 67.9%. So those are lower end contact rates, which leave me a little bit concerned. I don't know. I don't think he's a good hitter. Obviously, I missed my fourth ranked prospect. So I do think a lot of him and the power speed, obviously being there, he does walk a lot, which you know, helps. But he doesn't put a ton of balls in the play when he's striking out at a high rate and walking at a high rate, which does have me a little bit concerned. But consistently throughout the minor leagues, he's run lower contact rates. So that does have me a little concerned. I think there's an adjustment period, like with Kelnick, that we're going to see, which has me avoiding Green this year. I think we see him up pretty early, but with most prospects coming up, there is a huge adjustment period.
Yep.
When you think about hitting major league pitching. So especially when you have the contact rates like Green does, which, you know, which leads me to believe that Torkelson is going to be more successful initially just because he's a higher contact type hitter. And they're different in that those aspects where Tork is going to hit for better average, and his contact rates were significantly better in AA and AAA, which does benefit him. So I would lean Tork for this year, and they're both going to be really, really good long term.
Yeah, I would as well. And it was really encouraging when we saw him out in Arizona, Chris, how he was using the entire field, not just trying to, you know, hit tanks to his pull side. There was a lot of, you know, nice base knocks the other way. So that definitely had me encouraged, because I was a little concerned how much average he would hit overall, especially in year one. But I'm a little less concerned about that at this point. But that is going to wrap us up. Paul, thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun. Thanks, buddy.
Gentlemen, it was great speaking with you, and I really appreciate you having me on. And again, congratulations on 100.
Yeah, Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thanks to all the listeners for the last 100 episodes, and there'll be 100 more, and maybe hopefully someday we're talking about episode 1,000, as you guys just had Sleeper on the Bus not too long ago. And congratulations on that as well.
Thank you.
It's been one of the ones I listened to way back when, before I even got into this industry. So obviously if you people out there aren't listening to Sleeper on the Bus, I don't know what the heck you're doing.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
To be honest, and obviously follow Spore if you're not already at Spore, S-P-O-R-E-R. You can follow Chris and I at EricCross04 and at Roto Clegg, and our show is at Fantrax Toolshed, and all of our written work at Fantrax HQ on our Patreon, or a little bit at Fantasy Pros as well. And join us next time for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Want to create a breakthrough gene therapy or life-saving vaccine? Pioneer aerospace excellence? Take your hospitality tech brand international? Montgomery County, Maryland is where you can do all that and more. Use our ideal location next to DC, diverse world-class talent, and our vast business resources to be the next company to make your mark and transform the world. Visit bnext.thinkmoco.com. That's bnext.thinkmoco.com to learn how we can help you create something remarkable.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.